You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Listen, Jamaicans contribute so much to this city. It's like crazy. And this country, like, it's so crazy how much the city would lack if it wasn't for, like, you know, Jamaican and all Caribbean culture.
So, welcome back to another episode of Black Tea, Canada's favorite podcast. But of course, I'm a bit biased. Mel, what are you saying?
Definitely my favorite podcast. It's the only one I listen to right now.
That's right. So, what's going on with you, Mel? How's it going?
Yeah, I'm fine. I mean, you know what? It is what it is. We're all just getting through what we're getting through right now with the pandemic and such. But I did want to really highlight, not spend a lot of time on it, but I'm really irked. I'm even doing it before the tea segment. That's how pissed I am that our premier, who's, you know, constantly mired with scandal, Doug Ford, refuses now to apologize to a comment he made about immigrants. He was talking about the shortage of workers in the province, and he said, people who want to come and work their tail off like every new Canadian has done should come to Ontario. But those who want to collect the dole and sit around should go elsewhere. So the only thing I actually want to say about this, because everything that needs to be said has been said, is that we can't let this disappear with the news cycle. We need to carry this into the election.
Right. And while we're doing that, can we carry our Prime Minister, you know, Justin Trudeau, who's, you know, a chronic blackface where
chronic everything. He has his own page of scandals on Wikipedia. We're always carrying him.
That's right. No, for sure. And he continues to, you know, crap on our Indigenous community. So yeah, that's, I'm over politics, Mel. They're all just a bunch of not so yuck. They're yucky. At the federal level, at the provincial level, yucky. Yeah, they're not fooling us. Anyways, on to another show. They are not fooling us.
And speaking of politicians, we're about to interview somebody who has spoken to all of them, Brandon Gomez. We have the legendary Brandon Gomez, not in the building, but talking to us. And let me just get through his bio so we can get straight to it, okay? Brandon Gomez, he's the CEO and founder of Gomez Media, Canada's fastest growing online news and entertainment company. And he currently hosts the number one online news and entertainment show that we all know, the Brandon Gomez Show. Prior to the launch of his new business, Brandon was a reporter and anchor at CP24. He delivered daily news coverage of the most significant breaking news unfolding across the Greater Toronto Area. And he also created the Dutty Storm hashtag, I will add that. He joined the CP24 team in January 2019 from CTV's national morning show, Your Morning, where he woke up Canadian viewers with cross-country weather and news updates, hailing from Toronto but raised in Brampton. He enjoys spending time with his family and friends, especially his nephew, Noah. And in his spare time, he likes to travel, watch Raptors games, play basketball and tennis. But we already know that. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, guys. Oh, my gosh. I'm blushing already. Like, literally, I'm blushing.
That's really already? Okay, good. We're good to go then.
And what does that even look like when us black people of African descent blush? What does it look like, you know? What's going on, really?
I start to sweat. I start to get a little bit moist in the skin. I need a powder touch-up.
Okay, nice. We got to get some visuals. Yeah.
Okay, so Brandon, we know you from, I mean, I know you from CP24 in Your Morning. The whole country knows you. You're just such a presence on television. And, you know, you've had this journey. It's been a quick journey, too, from our eyes and our perspective, doing your own thing. And so it's not just about, you know, I want to know about not only the courage to do it, but, you know, the audacity and the impetus to do a show like this. Because I always want to know when people walk away from something comfortable, you had a great job. You know, there's always a story there. So I just wondered if you wanted to share.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because I think a lot of people have a lot of questions of why. Why, you know, make that transition? Why make that leap of faith or take that leap of faith? And I mean, as you said, like leading into that question, comfortable, like what is comfortable, right? Like, was the paycheck comfortable? Yeah. But was the environment, the ability to storytell, the ability to connect authentically, like constantly comfortable? Not really, you know? And as everybody knows, like our industry is changing and it's changing super, super fast. And I just was in the year of 2020 with so many things going on, this pandemic. We know what happened with George Floyd. And I just had like this burning fire that like there was so much more that I wanted to offer. There was so much more I knew I could do. There were so many talented people around me that I wanted just to bring into a fold to see those talents like unfold. And one point I just had some drinks with some friends and I just said, let's do this.
Wow.
As simple as it sounds, it wasn't that simple, but like, that's basically the story.
Okay. Well, I mean, the whole thing about you saying, you know, we do things differently, we all tell a story, because I'm so used to, especially here in Canada, you know, we need diversity. Let's get someone in there. Let's really tell stories. But you're actually doing it. And you actually, you don't code switch. You are yourself. Like, I just think it's interesting.
Yeah. You know, that code switch thing, right? Like every Black person knows about that. Mm-hmm. At some point in our lives, we all had to do it, might still have to do it. And it gets, I don't know about you guys, but it gets really tiring, you know? Like, it's like, why can't we just be authentically ourselves? Why can't we see and hear the conversations that you will naturally see on the TTC or in malls across the Toronto area, across this country? Why can't we see that reflected on our screens? Like, where did this normalization of like just one way of doing things, saying things come to be? And I guess, you know, me always liking to be a challenger or whatever, you know, you call it, was just like, oh, I'm over this.
Yeah, no, as we should all be, you know, that's my personal opinion. I mean, I think, you know, even this idea, Brandon, I mean, in interviews, you know, you mentioned this idea of betting on yourself, which is in my humble opinion, it's an important and really smart thing to do. You know, being based in Canada, I also get this feeling that we're a little bit less entrepreneurial. We're a little bit more conservative here when it comes to making power moves like this. Do you think in Canada, we really get this idea of betting on yourself, you know, entrepreneurism?
I think it's difficult for people to do that in this country. And for the reason of, like, just economies of scale. We consume so much American stories, media, you name it, where when you bet on yourself, it's from the American perspective, but it's possible there because that's the land of opportunity. Here in Canada, though, like everybody knows, and many people do work in industries that are protected, government protected. So you don't necessarily see that innovation. So you don't see that risk taking. Or if people have made it big in the past, you know, the 1, 2, 3 odd few, they had to go to the States to do so. So when you try to look for examples of like, can you actually do it? You can't really find that many. So then it becomes scary. And it goes back to that saying, like, if you can't see it, how can you believe it? So yeah, I think that's an issue in our country. And I think we ought to do a better job at fostering an environment where people can take risk and it doesn't have to be so do or die. Because I think when you even think about taking risks, and I'm just talking as a Black man, like there's so much more on top of that that you have to walk with, because I don't have the privileges and many Black people don't have the privileges of just saying, I'm going to take a risk. And if I fail, I'll just start again. Like, what bed do you have to fall back on? You know what I mean? Like, if you don't come from a family that has money, for example, like there's so many things that go in your mind on top of just taking a risk when you're a person of color.
Right, right. But even you, Brandon, and it's this idea around, you know, you build it and they will come, you know, because, you know, you're doing, you know, very well on social media. Like you have like over 74,000 followers on Instagram and on YouTube. What is it, like 28,000 subscribers? Like you seem, you know, you've built it and people are coming, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, can you sort of speak about that? Like, yeah, people are there for you, you know?
Well, that's what humbles me every single day, but it also what motivates and drives our team. Because, you know, when I took that leap of faith, there was no guarantee that people were going to watch or people were going to follow like our show pages that we created. And here we are like 10 months later and our show IG page has 32,000 followers. Like we're competing with some of the national shows on some of these networks. And it's like, for us, it's like, wow, like that's just a sign that this is what the community really wanted, what was missing in the environment, but it's also pressure for us. And it holds us accountable. Like we have to deliver, because if people are putting their trust in us, then we have to continue to make sure that they can trust us. So everything we do is from the lens of the community and making sure that we are a voice for people whose voices are not heard enough.
Well, that's huge. And I sort of want to touch on, you know, when you talk about young people don't watch the news, they think it's negative. You want to meet people where they are. And, you know, some of the things you've done on your show, you've spoken to the Prime Minister, you've spoken to Dr. Tam, you had, you know, my favorite segment, the official launch of Caravana with Doug Ford and John Tory to meet like that. I thought that was amazing. Like, how important is that to you to see, not only just have people see themselves reflected, but, you know, be excited about, you know, to be honest, some of these things aren't exciting. Like, I'm a nerd, so I love politics and stuff like that, but you actually make politics cool.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. I'm going to tell the team that you said that. That is so cool that you said that. We talk about this almost every single morning we step in. It's like, how are we going to communicate this information? That is essential because we need to know what's happening in our society. We need to know what the decision makers, what they're doing, and if they're not doing things in our favor. How do we present that information that is going to be like really consumable and like people are going to grasp it and want to know it? Because like for far too long, it wasn't communicated in ways that was consumable. It felt so foreign. It felt boring. So then what happens when you're not getting that information? Then you're left out of the conversation. You don't know what's happening. And then, you know, these decision makers can go on and do whatever they want. And then after, we have no idea. You know what I mean? And so like for us, like it's so important that like, you know, people get it so that they can be enlightened and that they can talk about the news and say like, yo, I know what's happening. Like, I know what's, you know, what's going on. Like the mayor or premier or prime minister, you can't do this or you haven't done this. You know what I'm saying? Like it's for me, it's about feeling empowered. When you walk out there, like, you know what's happening in your community. You know who didn't look out for you. So when you go to the voting booth, you know who not to vote for or you know who to vote for. So yeah, I mean, like I said, like it gets me going, but like, It's what I love to do at the same time. Like, I really do love what I do. And I'm grateful I can do what I love, what I do, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know what I like to, this idea of, because, you know, you're a news reporter. And so some really interesting human interest stories. I mean, there was one I watched on your show about an Uber driver, you know, who became a Canadian Olympian, the sprinter Gavin Smellie. And that's an issue. Like, I ran track in university. I went to York in Toronto. And
same.
Yeah,
me
the
too.
Reason I yeah, oh, you're a Yorkie? Yeah.
Yeah.
And
who
didn't go to York? We're all Jamaican, too. I just want to point out we're all Jamaican as well.
Hey, listen, Jamaicans contribute so much to this city. It's like crazy. And this country, like, it's so crazy.
I know
how much the city would lack if it wasn't for, like, you know, Jamaican and all Caribbean culture.
Yes.
Okay, let me just put that out there because I'm a unifier. Yeah. We're going to unify us. All.
Okay, fine. We're the biggest, though. We're still the biggest in the map.
Facts.
No, for sure, for sure, yeah. No, I mean, I spend a fair amount of time educating non-Caribbean types and non-Jamaican types just about our vast country. I mean, like, I work out of Ryerson University or ex-university. You know, it's going to be renamed, but there's a big building there. It's called, you know, the Raymond Chang School of Continuing Studies, and he's a, you know, Jamaican, a billionaire, essentially, right? Jamaican Chinese billionaire. When you go to the Royal Ontario Museum, hey, there's this big crystal, right? Michael Leachin crystal.
Yeah.
Right? He's Jamaican, right? So there are all these billionaires and people doing amazing things, and they just happen to be Jamaican, right? So it's always a good thing to educate people on what's been good. Or would they say, we little but we talawa,
exactly.
You know? We're tiny island.
Exactly.
But punching far above our weight.
I love this podcast. This podcast is a vibe.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, so Brandon, I mean, as far as like the business of the Brandon Gonis show, like there's a whole, you know, generation of media entrepreneurs who essentially live and eat in the digital space, right? And and you know, a lot of them are able to generate good revenues from their content, right? Whether it be from, you know, YouTube, you know, Instagram, Triller, TikTok, whatever. Now, can you talk to us a little bit about the business behind the Brandon Gonis show as far as YouTube, social media, monetizing, you know, profiting off of your show, right? Because a lot of people don't quite understand that piece.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like to call it our secret sauce. So I can't say too much, you know, it's like KFC, right? You got to hold on to your ingredients. But what I can say is this. I mean, people know like that we have specific partnerships with certain brands that to me are authentic. One of those brands is Hennessy, for example. Even before I partnered with them, I used to drink Hennessy. I mean, I still do. But like people would see that, like they would know that if they followed me. And so like when that partnership came about, it was so authentic to who I was that it really manifested in ways that it needed to do. You know, it gave what it needed to give. And so and so what we've done is like we've found strategic partners who kind of believe in our vision, believe in my vision, and they've been able to support us without compromising our editorial content. Because at the end of the day, if there was ever a piece that was going to happen, it just wouldn't be a match. So we've had to be strategic. And of course, there's the whole monetization aspect on being on YouTube that helps supplements the income at the same time. But it's been a process. I'm not going to say that it's been easy, because it requires a strong, dedicated, hardworking team that believes in the vision every single day, because we don't have a network behind us. We don't have cable subscription revenues to pad our bottom line. We have to produce content that people want to watch and see for us to make our buck. And so, again, that's one of the driving factors every single day we wake up.
You've done some interesting segments sort of covering off, you know, the GTA. Like you spent some time, you know, Jane and Finch. You did a segment on Saving Little Jamaica. It's a neighborhood I live nearby. Like I'm a 5-minute walk away from there. You know, the aforementioned Caravan. Like, were there any segments you've recorded thus far or, you know, shows that surprised you, you know, as you went to go check out different parts of your city?
You know, I don't know if anything really surprises me anymore. I've come to realize, expect the unexpected. Like anytime we've gone to a shoot to expect something, we've always left with something else. And that's what makes this job so much fun, is not going in with a pre-written story. It's like, let's go, let's see what we get. Because once you go and enter a place or visit a place and you go with that mindset, then you've opened a whole realm of possibilities. Right? And then your eyes are open to everything. But if you're just going in with the prism of this is what it is, and that's the story you're going to get, then you've left out potentially a whole nother story or a whole bunch of stories that could be out there. So for me, one that is really special in my heart is, you know, the Jane and Finch story, because it was part of the first episode. Oh my goodness, and getting that episode together was crazy. We always still laugh about how much it took, because we've come such a long way. But like going there and talking to people, like literally like right on the corner of Jane and Finch, and hearing people describe their community in ways that you never hear on legacy media, like the sense of community that's there, the pride that they have for their community, like how much people have their backs. Like it was so heartwarming. And at times I got goosebumps, because it's like, imagine if this story was told more often, right? Like, imagine this positive stigma we could put on Jane and Finch rather than the negative stigma that's been, you know, placed on that community for decades, right? Like, I just want to rewrite the narratives that have, you know, often been told for far too long by people who don't care about these people that they report on. And so, I don't know, I have a special fond memory of that. Of that one, because it was a moment that even after we were finished, we left saying like, wow, this is why we're doing what we're doing as a team. And it continues to motivate us.
Yeah, absolutely. And the mainstream media, they've been doing largely a lousy job. It's very xenophobic. A lot of traces, you know, anti-Black racism. I mean, it's just throughout. So it's sort of turned Jane and Finch and neighborhoods that are, you know, occupied by racialized community members, it sort of turned it into this sort of caricature, you know? So whenever you hear Jane and Finch, people have these feelings, you know? So glad that you're trying to reverse that, remix that, put a mirror to the reality, you know, actually going there and speaking to community residents about how they feel about their neighborhood, you know? So kudos to you for doing that.
Yeah, and there's some amazing spots to check out. Like, you know, like we were there, we learned that there's such a large Latino population, Hispanic population living in Jane and Finch now, the amount of restaurants, the amount of community that's there. And it's just like, why are we not hearing these stories? You know, we need to do a better job at reflecting what the real world is to our people as a whole. It doesn't matter what color you are.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. And where is Brandon Gonez going to be, you know, 5 years from now? Like, what is he going to be doing?
Oh, gosh, what is BG going to be doing? BG just moves day by day, I'll be honest with you.
Sounds like a good plan.
You know what I can tell you is this. The company Gonez Media, which we now call GMI, it's going to be such a large force in Canada doing things that probably nobody thought we would be doing when I first announced this. And I'm so excited because we do have plans that are slowly coming into place. And we have some announcements that are going to be coming even by the end of the year. But just know, like, GMI is going to be for us, by us, always. And we're going to stay true to that. And just ride with us. That's all I can ask for. Just ride with us as we're going through these waves. Because we have so many big plans that we're so excited for. And we just want everybody to feel proud that this is a Black-owned media company that, you know, started off with a whole bunch of people donating their time. And now we're a team of 10, more than half of which are full time. And it's like, you know, we're creating opportunities and like we're doing it our way. I wish I got to see that when I was coming up. So I really hope that anybody younger or even older that is wondering, can they take their leap of faith, bet on themselves? Yeah, you can. And don't be afraid of taking that risk. Walk with your head held high and walk with that confidence, just like any other child or adult of any other skin tone would do. Like, walk with that swag, like, just walk with it.
So I'm not going to do what you did to Jagmeet Singh and create a war and ask for you to choose between reggae and soca, which I thought was extremely unfair. It was unfair. But what I do want to know is, what is your favorite Jamaican spot in the city to eat?
Oh, that's hard because there's so many good spots. Like, there are so many good, but I'm going to say my uncle's restaurant. So I am going to be biased and I'm going to be biased here. And the restaurant's called Jamaica and it's located in Brampton at Queen and Kennedy. So go check it out. The food is great. Okay. The service is great. The vibe is great. And I like to eat there because I know the cooking. You know, like, I don't know about like other Jamaicans, but it's like, there's nothing like having your own family is cooking. I mean, yeah, you can eat out, but like, you're always judging it even harder, right? You're like, the jerk wasn't done, you know, the curry, I don't really eat oxtail from anywhere else other than family. Like, I'm a little bit particular like that. So I would say my uncle's restaurant because he really does what needs to be done.
That sounds dope. Let's check it out. So Jamaica?
Jamaica. It's difficult to spell on Google, but it's Xaymaca.
You heard it here first. Well, we'll meet you all in Jamaica.
This is what we're going to do, Mel. You know, maybe when the season wraps, third season, rah-rah, is we're going to go eat at Jamaica and then just like get loaded on some Hennessy.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? We're going to holler. No, I shouldn't say get loaded. That's not a good thing. But we're going to drink some Hennessy.
It is a good thing
tastefully.
Listen, it is definitely a good thing.
We can hold it down.
Hennessy does what Hennessy needs to do. And the food at Jamaica will make you feel sweet. And then the company that you're going to have, especially when I'm going to step in and I'm going to join you guys.
We're
going to have a vibe. We're going to have a vibe.
Well, we want to thank you, Brandon, for being a guest on our show, Black Tea. And yeah, a lot of what you said, man, it falls in line with where society is at now and where it's going. And we also got to shout out Stefan James and Shamir Anderson. They have the Black Academy Awards coming in 2022.
Yes.
And there's just so many great, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Black achievers and doing just great things in the worlds of, you know, traditional television, film, online, YouTube, TikTokers. I'm here for all of this.
Mm-hmm. I'm here with you. Like, let's just celebrate each other, you know, like, it's time for that. It excites me. Like, it really excites me. And I hope everybody is feeling excited because I really do feel like the tide is churning in the right direction this time.
Amen.
And thank you guys for having me on.
Oh, Brandon.
Black
yes,
tea.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just how I like it. Nice and black.
Welcome back to our tea segment. And we are going to be talking about Kyrie Irving. And I was actually going to say, Dalton, explain this to me like I'm a fifth grader, but just explain it to me like I'm me, because I have no idea what's going on and I don't follow sports.
Yeah, totally. I mean, well, Kyrie Irving, who just happens to be one of my favorite basketball players in the NBA, you know, he's an NBA champion. He has amazing handles. Handles loosely translates to the way he dribbles the ball is just ridiculous. But he basically is refusing to get inoculated against COVID-19. And his team, the Brooklyn Nets and the NBA, until he gets vaccinated due to New York City law that requires everyone in New York State to prove that they've been vaccinated to participate in indoor activities like playing NBA basketball games. That's what's happening. So he's in a situation where, he can't play home games, in Brooklyn, and will play half the season, which is very unfortunate because the Brooklyn Nets, they're actually my pick to win the whole thing this year, if not the LA Lakers with LeBron. So it's creating a lot of difficulty, a lot of controversy, a lot of scandal, a lot of
Well, is he even going to be able to go on the road? Because people are saying he's going to lose $17 million and he's at risk of losing his extension. Like, did they make that decision that he's going to be able to travel with the team? I just thought he wasn't with the team right now.
Yeah. It's all in progress. They're trying to figure out what to do with Kyrie. Here's the thing with Kyrie Irving. I love the fact that, he's an independent thinker, right? Like, I'm a Kyrie fan. I love the fact that he can think for himself, unlike many professional athletes that sort of come off like robots, they're like reading the teleprompter. They don't sound intelligible when it comes to social issues, the political issues. That's not Kyrie Irving.
So he's known for having an opinion. We just don't know if this one's a good one.
Precisely. Yeah. He can think for himself. That's exactly okay. It. I mean, he's totally independent in thought and action, unlike the vast majority of professional athletes who are like robots when it comes to press conferences and having, a say on, issues tied to race or class or gender or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the stuff I read a Deadspin article that called him selfish and an ESPN article that basically went over this Instagram live where he kind of went on a rant and he's talking about how this is his personal choice. And it's sort of that wording is not necessarily the best thing to say because everybody knows that you get vaccinated for other people, not yourself. So I know there's tension there.
Yeah.
But in terms of this whole independent thinking thing, because I think it's so interesting, the people that are supporting him, like Chris Brown and just other people are just saying like, stand up for yourself. But like, is this the right issue to be standing up for yourself about? Like, because I find that he keeps saying, this is about me, this is about me. And the echo back is, no, it's about everybody.
That's it. And it's funny you mentioned Chris Brown because, no one cares what Chris Brown thinks about the pandemic, vaccine mandates. I got to be honest, right?
I know. Yeah.
Kyrie, he's an enigma. Again, I'm saying this as a Kyrie fan. Because this is where the problems began, Mel, and this is where I radically differ from his views. I beg to differ, but he started apparently following and liking these Instagram posts from one of those anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorists. The ones, Mel, who claim that, secret societies are implanting vaccines.
Of course. But this is why it's so interesting to me that Kyrie is saying this is not about being anti-vax. Why does he keep saying that if this is what he's espousing and liking?
Yeah. No, for him it is. And he should just come out and say it. And I mean, the NBA, they have a mandate. The league office said that 100% of the players that want to play this season are going to have to get vaccinated against COVID-19. That's what the NBA wants to do. It's their league. Now, I also believe in, freedom of, choice and expression. And hey, if there are players that don't want to get vaccinated and choose to sit out the year, then sit out the year. One of my absolute idols when it comes to, or icon, icons that I really appreciate is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? So he used to play for the Los Angeles Lakers back in the days. And he's like, seven foot one. Like, he's just an absolute titan on and off the court. And I'm going to read for our listeners what he had to say about this issue. And I agree wholeheartedly. He said that there is no room for players who are willing to risk the health and lives of their teammates, the staff, and the fans simply because they are unable to grasp the seriousness of the situation or do the necessary research. He continues, what I find especially disingenuous about the vaccine deniers is their arrogance at disbelieving immunology and other medical experts. Yet, if their child or children were sick or they themselves needed emergency medical treatment, how quickly would they do exactly what those same experts told them to do? Now, here's the kicker. Here's the mic drop moment from Kareem. He says, I'm also concerned about how this perpetuates the stereotype of dumb jocks who are unable to look at verified scientific evidence and reach a rational conclusion. Boom, mic.
Whoa, that hurts. I haven't thought about athletes. I didn't make that connection.
Right, yeah. It's a harsh criticism and it's a stereotype and caricature that athletes have been, you know, trying to fight to rid themselves of forever. But, you know, some feed into that. I don't know if Kyrie's one of those people, but they do feed into that. Just listen to NFL or NBA press conference, you know, if you want to get some substance tied to issues oriented things, you're not going to find that. That's why I like Colin Kaepernick, people that can actually think about things and say, hey, yeah, you know, anti-black racism is bad. Can we do something about it? And rather than just sort of towing the line because you're making millions of dollars. So you have no say, you have no sway as far as the social consciousness. Like, that's weird to me. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's
no. You should be a thinking person. And like, it's now that I think about it, most of the athletes that I know are a part of the culture that way. And I know them through that, not what they play.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've never even thought about it that way, but that is a really interesting point. And I guess that's why everybody's talking about this story.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there was a comparison made, you know, between Kyrie Irving and being like a human rights leader, you know, like Muhammad, like the late Muhammad Ali. They say he's like Ali, standing up against the powers that be and the profession. And and it's just like, and you know, it was Charles Barkley said, like, you know, don't compare anybody to Ali. Are you nuts? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Kyrie Irving is still going to get paid $17 million if he half of his salary for playing away games. Whereas Muhammad Ali forfeited everything, you know, he couldn't box anywhere. In America, and he, as far as, you know, prison, like the whole thing, like he risked it all actually, you know, to not go to Vietnam.
That's definitely a human rights issue. I mean,
yeah,
it's completely different. I didn't understand that comparison at all, but Kyrie says that this is not going to ruin his career and he's in shape. This is just kind of a bump in the road, I guess. That's the way it's being treated. But I don't know. What do you think is going to happen, Dalton?
At the end of the day, Kyrie, he chose himself over his team, his teammates, and his organization. And you know what? He has every right to do that. I mean, I'm fully vaccinated and I kind of believe in the vaccination process. But, you know, if you don't and you're like Kyrie, don't come anywhere near me without having been tested, without being fully masked. You know, stay 6 feet away from me and we're good. That's it.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Black Tea. We'd like to thank our producer, Kevin Sexton, Ryan Clark, who is our sound mixer, and our showrunner, Claire Brassard.